Part 4. Fidelitatis. Not for ourselves alone are we born. Marcus Tullius Cicero. Chapter 1. Dissonance. 1. Kira's eyes snapped open. Why had she woken? Some change in the environment had roused the soft blade, and it her. An almost imperceptible shift in the air current circulating throughout the wallfish. A distant whir of machinery coming to life. A slight decrease in the otherwise stifling temperature. Something. A jolt of alarm caused her to glance at the nearby airlock. The jelly, Itari, was still inside where it ought to be, encased in its secreted pod, barely visible in the dull red light of the long ship night. Kira let out her breath, relieved. She really didn't want to have to fight the jelly.
Grigorovich,
she said. Her voice was rusty as an old wrench. She coughed and tried again, but the ship mind still didn't answer. She tried a different tack.
Morven, are you there?
Yes, Miss Navarez,
the wallfish's pseudo-intelligence answered.
Where are we?
Kira's throat was so parched the words came out in a faint rasp. She tried to swallow, despite the lack of moisture in her mouth.
We have just arrived at our destination, said Morven.
So,
Kira croaked.
That is correct, Ms. Navarez. Sol system. The wallfish emerged from FTL 4 minutes and 21 seconds ago. Standard arrival procedures are in effect. Captain Falcone and the rest of the crew will be awake soon.
They'd made it. They'd actually made it. Kira dreaded to think about all the things that might have happened since they'd left 61 Cygni 6 months ago. It hardly seemed real that they'd been traveling for half a year. The wonders of hibernation, artificial or otherwise.
Has anyone hailed us?
She asked.
Yes, Miss Navarez,
Morven replied, prompt as could be.
14 messages from UMC monitoring stations. I have explained that the crew is currently indisposed. However, local authorities are most insistent that we identify our system of origin and our current mission as soon as possible. They are rather agitated, Miss Navarez.
Yeah,
Kira muttered. Falcone could deal with the UMC once he was out of cryo. He was good at that sort of thing. Besides, she knew he would want to speak for the wallfish. Feeling uncomfortably stiff, she began to extract herself from the nest of blankets and webbing she'd constructed close to the airlock. Her hand. Her forearm and hand that she had cut off in the jelly's ship had reappeared. Astonished. Disbelieving. Kira held up the arm and turned it so she could see every part, working her fingers open and closed. She wasn't imagining things. The arm was real. Hardly believing, she touched it with her other hand, feeling fingers sliding across fingers. Only 5 days had passed since she'd last woken, and in that time the soft blade had constructed a perfect replica of the flesh she had lost. Or had it? A sudden shade of fear colored Kira's thoughts. Drawing a breath, she focused on the back of her hand, and with an effort of will forced the soft blade to retreat. It did, and she uttered a soft cry as the shape of her hand caved inward, melting away like ice cream on a hot summer's day. She recoiled, both mentally and physically, losing her focus in the process. The soft blade snapped back into shape, again assuming the form of her missing limb. Tears filmed her eyes, and Kira blinked, feeling a sense of bitter loss.
Damn it,
she muttered, angry with herself. Why was she letting a missing hand affect her so much? Getting an arm or leg replaced wasn't that big of a deal. But it was. She was her body, and her body was her. There was no separation between mind and matter. Her hand had been a part of her self-image for her entire life up until Bug Hunt. And without it, Kira felt incomplete. For a moment, she'd had hope that she was whole again. But no, it wasn't to be. Still, she had a hand, and that was better than the alternative. And the fact that the soft blade had managed to replicate her missing limb was cause for optimism. Why had it done so now, and not before? Because it knew they were nearing the end of their trip? As a demonstration of the sort of cooperation she'd been attempting to train all the way from Bug Hunt? Kira wondered. Regardless of the answer, she felt vindicated in the results. The soft blade had acted of its own volition,
although perhaps guided by her own unvoiced desires, and in a constructive manner at that. Again, Kira examined her hand, and she marveled at the detail. It was, so far as she could tell, a near-perfect copy of the original. The only real difference she noticed was a slight disparity in density. The new arm felt perhaps a hair heavier, but it was a small change, hardly perceptible. Still testing the mobility of her new fingers, Kira climbed out of the nest. She attempted to pull up the date on her overlays, and only then realized that, as on the trip to Bug Hunt, the soft blade had absorbed her contacts. Belatedly, she remembered the small case containing the replacements Vishal had printed for her. She dug it out from the blankets and carefully placed each transparent lens onto the corresponding eye. She blinked and felt a sense of comfort as the familiar HUD of her overlays popped up. There now. She was a fully functioning person again. Resisting the urge to check the news, Kira left the airlock, pulled herself along the walls until she reached the center of the wallfish, and then started up the main shaft. The ship was still so quiet, empty and dark, it felt abandoned. If not for the sound of the life support fans, it might have been a derelict drifting alone through space for gods knew how long. Kira felt like a scavenger moving through halls that had once been inhabited by others, or like an explorer opening a centuries-old mausoleum. Her thoughts returned to the city on Nidus and their dire findings there. She growled and shook her head. Her imagination was getting the better of her. As she reached the level below the control deck, the thrust alert sounded. Taking heed, Kira planted her feet on the floor, and a proper sense of weight pressed her down. There was again a down, as the wallfish's fusion drive roared back to life. She sighed with relief, welcoming the burn. The surrounding light strips flickered and changed from red to the bluish-white glow of ship day. The light was almost painfully bright after so long spent in the somber dark. Kira shielded her face until her eyes adjusted. Falcone and the rest of the crew were just emerging from cryo when Kira arrived at the ship's storm shelter. Dropping to all fours on the deck, Sparrow dry-heaved like a cat with a hairball.
God, I hate long runs,
the woman said, and wiped her mouth.
Good, you're up, said Kira.
Falcone grunted,
if you can call it that.
He looked as green as Sparrow, and like all the crew, he had bruised circles under his eyes. Kira didn't envy them the side effects of such an extended cryo sleep. Sparrow hacked again and then staggered to her feet and joined Falcone, Nielsen, and Hua Chung as they retrieved clothes from their lockers. Vishal took longer to get going. Once he did, he went around handing out the little blue pills Kira knew so well. They helped with the nausea, as well as replenishing some of the body's lost nutrients. Vishal offered one of the pills to her as well, but she declined.
What's the shape of things?
Falcone asked, pulling on his boots. Not sure yet, said Kira. Then Grigorovich's voice broke in on them with a laughing, teasing tone.
Greetings, my lovelies. Welcome back to the land of the living. Yes, oh yes, we survived the great journey across the void. Once again we have defied the dark and lived to tell the tale.
And he laughed until the ship rang with the sound of his voice.
Someone's in a good mood, said Nielsen as she closed her locker.
Vishal joined her and bent his head to ask her something in an undertone.
Hey,
said Sparrow, taking a proper look at Kira.
Where'd you get the new arm?
Kira shrugged, self-conscious. The soft blade. I woke up with it.
Huh. Just make sure it doesn't get away from you.
Yes, thank you. All of the cryotubes were open, save Trigg's. Kira went to pay her respects. Through the frosted viewplate, the kid looked the same as before, his expression unsettlingly serene. If not for the deathly pallor of his skin, he might have been sleeping.
Right, said Falcone as he started toward the door. Let's see what's what.
2.
Jesus fucking Christ on a stick, said Sparrow.
Next to her, Hua Chung's brow pinched, and she made a disapproving sound, though she never took her gaze off the hollow. None of them did. Falcone was scrolling through images from throughout the system. Sol was a war zone. The ruins of antimatter farms floated inside the orbit of Mercury. Ship debris cluttered the skies over Venus and Mars. On asteroids, hab domes had been cracked open like eggs.
Damaged space stations, rings, and O'Neill cylinders drifted abandoned throughout the system. Hydrotech refueling facilities were venting plumes of burning hydrogen from punctured storage tanks. On Earth, Earth of all places, impact craters marred the northern and southern hemispheres, and a black blight covered part of Australia. Large numbers of ships and orbital platforms clustered around the settled planets. The UMC's 7th Fleet was masked by Deimos, close enough to the Markov limit that they could jump out at a short notice, but not so far away that they couldn't help the inner planets in an emergency. In several places, fighting was ongoing. The Jellies had established a small operating base all the way out on Pluto, and they'd invaded a number of underground settlements along the Arctic regions of Mars. The tunnels prevented the UMC from clearing out the aliens with aerial attacks, but ground operations were in progress to eliminate the Jellies while also trying to save the civilians in the area. More serious still was the blotch on Australia. A nightmare ship had crashed there, and within hours, their infection had taken root, spreading their corrupted tissue through the soil. Fortunately for Earth, the crash had occurred in the barest of deserts, and the immediate use of an orbital solar array to scorch and melt the area had contained the infection, although efforts were ongoing to ensure that no scrap of tissue had escaped destruction.
"My God," said Vishal, and crossed himself.
Even Falcone seemed stunned by the extent of the damage. Nielsen uttered a distressed sound as she pulled up a window listing the news from Venus. Kira glimpsed part of a headline saying, "Falling city is..."
"I have to make a call," said the first officer.
Her face was deathly pale.
"I have to check if... if..." "Go," said Falcone.
He touched her on the shoulder.
"We've got this."
Nielsen gave him a grateful look, and then hurried out of control. Kira exchanged worried glances with the rest of the crew. If Saul was this bad, what was the rest of the League like?
Wayland.
She fought a sudden surge of despair. Just as she started to search for news from home, Grigorovich said,
"Ahem, if I might make a suggestion, it would be best to answer the UMC before they do something foolish. They're threatening us with all sorts of violence if we don't provide immediate flight information, as well as clarification of intent."
Falcone sighed.
"Might as well get this over with. Do they know who we are?"
The ship mind chuckled without much humor.
"Judging by the frantic nature of their calls, I would say that is a most definite yes."
"All right, put them on the line."
Kira sat near the back of control and listened while Falcone talked with whomever Grigorovich had connected him with.
"Yes," he said.
"No.
That's right. The UMCS Darmstadt. Grigorovich, you'll..." "Uh-huh. She's right here."
"Okay. Roger that. Over and out."
"Well?" Kira asked. Falcone rubbed his face and looked between her, Sparrow, and Hua Chung. If anything, the circles under his eyes had gotten darker.
"They're taking us seriously, so that's a start. UMC wants us to dock at Orsted Station, right quick-like."
"How far away is that?" said Kira. Before she could pull up her overlays, Falcone said,
7 hours.
"Orsted is a hab ring out by Ganymede, one of Jupiter's moons," said Sparrow. "The UMC use it as a major staging point."
That made sense. The Markov limit for Sol was right near Jupiter's orbit. Kira didn't know a whole lot about Sol, but that much she remembered from her stellar geography class.
"You didn't tell them we have a Jelly on board?"
Kira said. Falcone took a long drink from a water bottle.
"Nope. Don't want to alarm them too much. Figured we can work up to it."
"They're going to be pissed when they find out," said Kira.
"That they are."
Then Haw's voice, rough from cryo, came over the intercom.
"Captain, we're out of the cryo tubes, but we need the Jelly to come get these damn cocoons off the rest of my men. We'd cut them off, but I'm not sure what it would do to them."
"Roger that, Lieutenant,"
Falcone said.
"Send someone over to the airlock and I'll have Kira meet them there."
"Appreciate it, Captain."
Falcone glanced at the ceiling.
"Grigorovich, is the Jelly awake yet?"
"Just barely," said the ship mind.
"Wonder how it knew," Falcone muttered.
Kira was already moving toward the door as he looked at her.
"I'm on it,"
she said. 3. Escorting Atari to the cargo hold, waiting while it extracted the three Marines and, with another secreted gel, revived them, took nearly 40 minutes. When not translating, Kira stood by one of the racks of equipment, skimming news reports from Wayland. They weren't encouraging. At least one article claimed that Wayland had suffered orbital bombardment near Highstone. Her family didn't live especially close to the city, but they were close enough that the news made Kira even more worried. The Jellies had also landed near Tosca, a settlement in Wayland's southern hemisphere, but according to the most recent news, which was nearly a month old, they hadn't stayed. Several nightmares had passed through the outer part of the system, and they and the Jellies had engaged in a furious fight, the outcome of which was unknown, as all ships involved had jumped to FTL, one after another. The League had sent reinforcements to the system, but it had only been a small task force. The bulk of their ships were kept concentrated in and around Sol to protect Earth. Kira stopped reading when Atari finished with the Marines, and she walked the Jelly back to the airlock. When Kira told it about Orsted, Atari expressed polite acknowledgement and nothing more. The alien seemed surprisingly uncurious about where the Wallfish was heading or what would happen when they arrived. When she asked about that, it replied,
"Atari here. The ripple will spread as it will."
With the Jelly back in the airlock, Kira swung by the galley to grab some food and then climbed back up to control. Nielsen arrived just as she did. The first officer was flushed and had tears in her eyes.
"Everything okay?"
Falcone asked from across the hollow table. Nielsen nodded as she sank into her crash chair.
"My family is alive, but my daughter Jan lost her home."
"On Venus?" Kira asked. Nielsen sniffed and smoothed the front of her tan shirt.
"The whole city was shot down. She barely escaped."
"Damn," said Falcone.
"At least she made it."
A minute of silence followed. Then Nielsen stiffened and looked around.
"Where's Vishal?"
Falcone waved toward the back of the ship in a distracted way.
"Went to check on sick bay. Said something about running a few tests on the Marines."
"Didn't he live in a hab cylinder here at Sol?" Concern spread across Falcone's face.
"Did he? He never mentioned that to me."
Nielsen let out an exasperated sound.
"Men, if you ever actually bothered asking some questions, you might learn."
She shoved herself up from her chair and stalked out of control. Falcone watched her go with a faint look of puzzlement. He looked over at Kira as if hoping for an explanation. She shrugged and looked back at her overlays. Interstellar wars were slow-moving affairs, even with technology as advanced as the Jellies. But what had occurred was of a depressing sameness. Wayland's experience was mirrored by those of the other colonies, although the battles at Stuart's world were more similar in size to those at Sol. And then there were the nightmares. As the months swept past, they had become increasingly prevalent, to the point where the UMC was fighting them as often as the Jellies. Every time they appeared, the monsters seemed to take a different set of forms, as if the result of constant mutation, or, as Kira felt more likely, as if the driving intelligence behind them, the mashing maw born of the unholy fusion of human, Renaui, and Softblade, was feverishly, frantically, insanely, and randomly experimenting to find the best possible flesh for fighting. The scale of suffering that the nightmares must be enduring, as well as inflicting, sickened Kira to think of. She was unsurprised to see that the war had resulted in an unprecedented drawing together of humanity. Even the Zarians had put aside their differences with the League in order to join forces against their shared enemies. What was the point of arguing amongst yourselves if the monsters in the dark were attacking? And yet, for all that, the combined might of every living human wasn't enough to fight off their attackers. Fragmented though the news was, it was more than clear that they were losing. Humanity was losing, despite every effort to the contrary. The news was overwhelming, exhausting, and depressing. At last, unable to bear any more, Kira tabbed out of her overlays and sat staring at the banks of lights and switches overhead, trying not to think about how everything seemed to be falling apart. An alert appeared in the bottom corner of her vision, a message waiting for her. Kira opened it, expecting to see something from Grigorovich. It wasn't. Sitting in her inbox was a reply to the video she'd sent to her family from 61 Cygni. A reply from her mother's account,
Kira stared, shocked. With a start, she remembered to breathe. She hadn't expected an answer. Her family couldn't have known where or when she would return. So how could there be a message waiting for her here, at Sol? Unless... Trembling slightly, she opened the file. A video appeared in front of her, a dark window into what appeared to be an underground bunker. Kira recognized it as the sort used for radiation shielding by the first wave of colonists on Wayland. Her parents were sitting facing her, gathered around a desk cluttered with tools and medkits. Istha stood behind them, peering between their mom and dad with an anxious face. Kira swallowed. Her dad had a bandage around his right thigh. He looked painfully thin, and the lines around his eyes and nose were far deeper than she remembered. There was white in his sideburns that shouldn't have been there, not if he'd gotten his scheduled stem shots. As for her mom, she'd grown even harder, like an eagle carved from granite, and her hair was cut short, in the style favored by colonists who spent most of their time living in skin suits. Only Istha appeared much the same, and Kira took some comfort in that. Her mom cleared her throat.
Kira, we just received your message yesterday. It was a month late, but it got here.
Then her dad.
We're really happy to know you're alive, honey. Really happy. You had us worried for a while.
Behind him, Istha ducked her head. Kira was surprised she didn't butt in. The restraint was uncharacteristic. But then, they were living in uncharacteristic times. Her mom glanced at the other two before focusing on the camera again.
I'm sorry.
We're sorry to hear about your teammates, Kira. And Alan. He seemed like a good person.
This can't be easy for you, her father added. Just know we're thinking about you and wishing you the best. I'm sure the scientists here in the League can find a way to get this alien...
He hesitated.
This alien parasite off you.
Her mom put a comforting hand on his arm.
She said, I'm not sure why the League let your message go through. Maybe they missed it, but whatever. I'm glad it got here. You can see we're not at home. The Jellies came by a few weeks ago, and there's been fighting around Highstone. We had to evacuate, but we're okay. We're doing fine. We have a place to stay here with some folks called the Numerises.
Over on the other side of the mountains, said her father.
A tip of the head from her mom.
They're letting us live in their shelter for the time being. It's decent protection, and we have plenty of room.
It didn't look like plenty of room to Kira.
The Jellies burn the greenhouses, Istha said in a low voice. They burned them, sis. Burned all of them.
No. Their parents shifted, uncomfortable. Her dad looked down at his large hands where they rested on his knees.
Yeah, he said.
Kira had never seen him appear so sad or defeated. A hollow chuckle escaped him.
Got this scratch trying to get out in time.
He tapped the bandage on his leg and forced a smile. Her mom stiffened her back and said,
Listen to me, Kira. You don't worry about us, okay? Go do this expedition you have to do, and we'll be here when you get back. We're going to send this recording to every system in the League, so no matter where you arrive, it'll be waiting for you.
We love you, honey, said her father, and we're very proud of you and the work you're doing. Try to stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
There was a bit more, a few more words of farewell from her mom and Istha, and then the video ended. Kira's overlay swam before her, blurred and watery. She took a hitched breath and realized she was crying. Closing the display, she hunched forward and buried her face in her hands.
Hey now, said Falcone, sounding alarmed and concerned at the same time.
He came over, and she felt his hand light between her shoulder blades.
What's wrong?
I got a message from my family, she said.
Are they?
No, they're fine. But,
Kira shook her head.
They had to leave our home, where I grew up, and just seeing them, my mom, my dad, my sister, they're not having an easy time of it.
No one is these days. Falcone said gently.
I know, but this was from...
She checked the date on the file. almost 2 months ago. 2 months. The Jellies hit Highstone with orbital bombardment about a month ago, and I don't even know if they're... She trailed off. The surface of her arms prickled with tiny points as the soft blade mirrored her emotions. A tear fell onto her left forearm and was quickly absorbed by the fibers. Falcone knelt next to her. Is there anything I can do? Surprised, she considered for a moment. No, but thank you. Only thing you or I or anyone can do to help is find a way to end this damn war.
That would certainly be nice.
She wiped her eyes with the heel of her hand. What about your family? Have you... A flicker of pain darkened his eyes.
No. And they're too far away to just call. I don't know if they'd want to hear from me anyway.
You don't know that, said Kira. Not for sure. Look at what's happening out there. We're facing what could be the end of everything. You should touch base with your parents. If not now, when?
Falcone was silent for a while, and then he patted her on the shoulder and stood. I'll think about it. It wasn't much, but Kira didn't think she could expect anything more from him.
She got to her feet as well and said, I'm going to my cabin. I want to answer them before we arrive at Orsted.
Falcone grunted, already lost in examination of the hollow. I wouldn't count on the League letting you get a message out, them or the Jellies. Bet you a bucket of bits Wayland is jammed up as bad as the toilet we had in the hold.
A moment of uncertainty shook Kira's confidence. Then, accepting the situation as it was, she steadied herself and said,
Doesn't matter. I have to try, you know? Family is that important to you, huh?
Of course. Isn't it to you? He didn't answer, but she saw the muscles in his shoulders bunch and tense. 4. 7 hours. They passed faster than Kira expected. She recorded her response to her family. She told them what had happened at Bug Hunt, although, as with Hawes, she avoided mentioning her role in creating the Maw, and she even showed them a little of what the soft blade was capable of by holding up her hand and forming the blossom of a midnight constellation from her palm. She hoped that would make her father smile. Most of what she said were general well wishes and exhortations for them to stay safe, and she ended with, Hopefully you get this in the next week or so. I don't know what the League is going to have me doing, but I'm guessing they won't let me communicate with you for a while. Whatever's happening there on Wayland, just hold on. We have a chance for peace with the Jellies, and I'm going to be working to make it happen as fast as possible. So don't give up, do you hear me? Don't give up.
Love you all.
Bye. Afterward, Kira took a few minutes for herself in the dark of her cabin, eyes closed, lights off, while she allowed her breathing to slow and body to cool. Then she gathered herself and returned to control. Bishal was there, talking in low tones with Falcone and Sparrow. The doctor stood bending at the neck to be closer to their heights.
That's too bad, Doc, said Falcone. Seriously, if you need to bail on us, I'd understand. We could pick up another.
Bishal was already shaking his head.
No, that will not be necessary, Captain, although I thank you. My uncle said he will let me know as soon as they find out.
Sparrow startled him with a slap on the shoulder.
You know we've got you back, Doc. Anything I can do to help, you just say the word and...
She made a whistling sound.
I'm there.
At first, Bishal appeared offended by her familiarity, but then his posture softened and he said,
I appreciate that, Miss Sparrow. Most truly I do.
As Kira took her seat, she gave Falcone an inquiring glance. What's up, Kira?
The Jellies destroyed Vishal's hab cylinder, Falcone.
Shit. What about his mother and sisters, Kira?
They might have gotten out in time, but so far, no news, Falcone.
As Vishal moved over to his crash chair near her own, Kira said, Falcone just told me. I'm so sorry. That's horrible. Bishal lowered himself into the chair. A dark frown furrowed his brow, but his voice remained gentle as he said,
Thank you for your kindness, Miss Kira. I'm sure everything will be fine, God willing.
Kira hoped he was right. She switched to her overlays and pulled up the feed from the wallfish's rear-facing cameras so she could watch their approach to the banded mass of Jupiter
and the tiny speckled disk that was Ganymede. The sight of Jupiter in all its orange-colored glory reminded her with painful strength of Zeus hanging in the sky of Adrastea. No wonder. The similarities had been the reason the original survey team had given Zeus its name. Ganymede, by comparison, seemed so small as to be inconsequential, even though, as Kira's overlays informed her, it was the largest moon in the system, larger even than the planet Mercury. As for their destination, Oersted Station, it was a fleck of dust floating high above the battered surface of Ganymede. Several sparkling motes, smaller still, accompanied it on its orbit, each mote marking the position of one of the many transports, cargo haulers, and drones clustered around the station. Kira shivered. She couldn't help it. No matter how often she thought she understood the immensity of space, something would happen to drive home the fact that, no, she really didn't. The human brain was physically incapable of grasping the distances and scales involved. At least, unaltered humans were. Maybe ship minds were different. All that empty vastness and nothing humans had built or would ever build could compare. She shook herself and returned her gaze to the station. Even the most experienced spacers could go mad if they stared into the void long enough. It had always been a goal of Kira's to visit Sol, and most particularly Earth, that great treasure trove of biology. But she had never imagined that her visit would occur as it was, harried and hurried, and in the shadow of war. Still, the sight of Jupiter filled her with a sense of wonder, and she wished Alan was there to share the experience with her. They'd talked about it a few times, making enough money so they could afford to vacation in Sol, or else getting a research grant that would allow them to travel to the system on the company dime. It had been nothing more than wishful thinking, though. Idle speculations on a possible future. Kira forced her thoughts elsewhere.
Everything ship-shape?
Falcone asked when Nielsen came floating through the doorway a few minutes later.
Ship-shape as can be, said Nielsen. We shouldn't have any problems with inspectors.
Aside from Itari, said Kira. The first officer smiled with a dry expression.
Yes, well, at least they can't blame us for breaking quarantine. There hasn't been proper biocontainment with the jelly since day one.
Then she went and sat in the crash chair on the other side of Vishal. Sparrow made a disgusted noise and looked over at Nielsen.
You see what the Stellarists are up to?
No worse than the expansion or conservation parties. They'd do the same if they were in charge.
Sparrow shook her head.
Yeah, you keep telling yourself that. The Premier is using this whole state of emergency thing to really clamp down on the colonies.
Ugh, said Kira. Why was she not surprised? The Stellarists were always putting Sol first. Understandable to a point, but it didn't mean she had to like it. Nielsen assumed a pleasantly blank face.
That is a rather extreme point of view, Sparrow.
Just you watch, the short-haired woman said. After this whole mess is over, if there even is an after, you won't be able to so much as spit without getting permission from Earth Central. Guarantee it. What am I saying? You're from Venus. Of course you're gonna back Earth. Just like everyone else who grew up with their heads in the clouds.
A frown settled on Nielsen's face, and she started to answer when Falcone said,
Enough with the politics. Save it for when we've got enough drink to make it tolerable.
Yes, sir, said Sparrow in a surly voice.
Kira returned her attention to her overlays. She never could keep track of the finer points of interstellar politics. Too many moving parts. But she did know she didn't like the Stellarists, and most politicians for that matter. As she watched, Oersted swelled in size until it dominated the aft view. The station looked heavy and brutal, like a gothic gyroscope, dark of hue and sharp of edge. The stationary shield ring appeared undamaged, but the rotating hab ring mated to it had several large rents along one quadrant, as if a monster had raked Oersted with its claws. Explosive decompression had peeled the hull back along the edges of the holes, turning the plating into lines of jagged petals. Between the petals, rooms were visible, white and glittery, with a layer of frost. The top face of Oersted's central hub, where top meant pointing away from Ganymede, was a bristle of antennas, dishes, telescopes, and weapons, standing motionless on their frictionless bearings. Most of the equipment appeared broken or slagged. Fortunately, the attacks didn't seem to have penetrated to the fusion reactor buried within the core of the hub. The spindly, cross-braced truss that extended for several hundred meters from the bottom face of Orsted's hub appeared intact, but many of the transparent radiators that fringed it had holes punched through them or had been shattered, reducing them to knife-like shards that dribbled molten metal from their severed veins. Dozens of service bots were flitting about the damaged radiators, working to stanch the loss of coolant. The auxiliary communications and defense array mounted at the far end of the truss appeared scorched and mangled. Through some incredible stroke of luck, the containment chamber in the Markov generator, which powered the station's FTL sensors, hadn't been breached. The generator only held a minuscule amount of antimatter at any given time, but if it had lost containment, the whole array, and a good part of the truss, would have been annihilated. Four UMC cruisers hung off the port side of the station, a visible demonstration of the League's military power.
"Fool," said Sparrow, taking a seat. "They really got the shit beat out of them."
"Ever been to Orsted before?" Kira asked. Sparrow licked her lips.
"Once, on leave. Wouldn't care to repeat the experience."
"Better strap in," said Falcone from across control.
"Yes, sir."
They secured themselves, and then the burn ended. Kira made a face at the return to zero-G. The wallfish performed one last skew flip, so it was flying nose first toward the station. And Grigorovich said,
"ETA 14 minutes.
Kira tried to empty her mind. Hua Chong joined them soon after, pulling herself into control with the grace of a ballet dancer. An expression of disgust marred her face, and she seemed more surly than usual.
"How are Runcible and Mr. Fuzzy Pants?" Falcone asked. The machine boss grimaced.
"That cat had another accident. Yuck. There was poop everywhere. If I ever buy a ship myself, I won't have a cat. Pigs are okay, not cats."
"Thanks for cleaning up."
"I deserve hazard pay."
For a time, they were silent. Then Sparrow said,
"You know, speaking of biocontainment, they really shouldn't have been so angry with us on Ruslan."
"Why's that?" Nielsen asked.
"All those escaped animals were a great source of nutrition."
Kira groaned along with everyone else, but it was a token protest. Most of them, she thought, were just sorry Trigg wasn't there to make his usual jokes.
"Thul be saving us from ponds," said Vishal.
"Could be worse," said Falcone.
"Yeah? How?"
"She could be a mime."
Sparrow threw a glove at him, and the captain laughed. 5. Kira's stomach tightened as the wallfish slowed, and, with a faint shudder, coupled with their assigned docking port in Orsted's shield ring. After a few seconds, the all-clear sounded.
"All right, listen up," said Falcone, pulling off his harness. "Captain Akawe arranged pardons for us."
He gave Kira a look from under his brow.
"All us miscreants, that is.
The League should have them on file, but that doesn't mean you should go making fools of yourselves. No one say nothing until we have representation and we're clear on the situation. That goes double for you, Grigorovich."
"As you say, Captain, oh my captain,"
the ship mind responded. Falcone grunted.
"And don't go blabbing about the jelly, neither. Kira and I will take care of that."
"Won't Haas and his men have already told the UMC?
Kira asked. A grim little smile from Falcone.
"I'm sure they would if I'd given them comms access, but I haven't."
"Hawes is fighting mad about it too," Nielsen said.
Falcone kicked his way over to the pressure door.
"Doesn't matter. We're going to talk with the UMC straight away, and it's going to take them some time to debrief our friendly neighborhood Marines."
"Do we all have to go?" said Hua Chong. "The wallfish still needs maintenance after that jump."
Falcone gestured toward the door.
"You'll have plenty of time to deal with the ship later, Hua Chong, I promise. And yes, we all have to go."
Sparrow groaned and Vishal rolled his eyes.
"The liaison officer on Orsted specifically asked for everyone on the ship. I think they're not sure what to make of us yet. They mentioned having to check for orders with Earth Central. Besides, we're not letting Kira walk in there alone."
"Thanks," she said. And she meant it.
"Of course.
Wouldn't let any of my crew go off by themselves.
Falcone grinned, and though it was a hard, dangerous grin, Kira found it reassuring.
If they don't treat you right, we'll kick up a ruckus until they do. Rest of you, you know the drill. Eyes peeled and mouths shut. Remember, this isn't shore leave.
Roger that.
Yes, sir.
Of course, Captain.
Wachung nodded. Falcone slapped the bulkhead.
Grigorovich, keep the ship on standby in case we have to leave in a hurry. And full monitoring of our overlays until we're back.
Of course, said Grigorovich in a warbling tone. I shall keep an ever so close watch upon the feeds from your peepers. Such delightful snooping, such scrumptious snooping.
Kira snorted. Their long sleep certainly hadn't changed him.
Are you expecting trouble?
Asked Nielsen as they left control.
No, said Falcone. But better safe than sorry.
Second that, said Sparrow.
With Falcone at the lead, they went to the central shaft of the Wallfish and pulled themselves along the ladder until they reached the airlock mounted in the nose of the ship. The Entropus joined them there, the Questant's robes billowing in freefall, like windblown sails. They dipped their heads and murmured, Captain, as they slowed to a stop.
Welcome to the party, said Falcone.
The airlock was crowded with all nine of them crammed in, especially with Wachung taking up nearly as much space as three of them combined, but with some pushing and shoving, they managed to fit. The airlock cycled with the usual assortment of clicks and hisses and other unidentifiable sounds, and when the outer door rolled open, Kira saw a loading dock identical to the one she'd arrived at on Vyborg over a year ago. It gave her a strange feeling, not quite deja vu, not quite nostalgia. What had once been familiar, even friendly, now seemed cold, stark, and, though she knew it was just nerves, out of joint. A small spherical drone was waiting for them, floating just to the left of the airlock. The yellow light next to its camera was on, and from a speaker came a man's voice.
This way, please.
With puffs of compressed air, the drone turned and jetted away toward the pressure door at the other end of the long, metal-clad room.
Guess we follow, said Falcone. Guess so, said Nielsen.
Don't they realize we're in a hurry? Said Kira.
Sparrow clucked her tongue.
You should know better, Navarez. You can't rush a bureaucracy. This time and then this military time. Hurry up and wait is standard operating procedure.
Then Falcone launched himself off the lip of the airlock toward the pressure door. He spiraled slowly through the air, one arm above his head to catch himself when he landed.
Show off,
said Nielsen, as she crawled out of the airlock and grabbed the handholds in the nearby wall. One by one, they left the Wallfish and crossed the loading dock, with its gimbaled Waldos and grooved strips for holding cargo containers in place. As they did, Kira knew that the lasers and magnets and other pieces of equipment were checking their ID, scanning them for explosives and other weapons, looking for traces of contraband and so on. It made her skin crawl, but there was nothing she could do about it. For a second, she considered allowing the mask to cover her face, but then she dismissed the urge. She wasn't going into battle after all. Past the pressure door, the drone zipped into the wide hallway beyond. It was at least 7 meters across, and after so long spent on the Wallfish, the amount of space seemed enormous. All the doors along the hallway were closed and locked, and aside from themselves, not one person was to be seen. Not there, and not around the corners of the first dogleg, nor the second.
Some welcoming committee, Falcone said dryly. Must be they are scared of us, said Vishal.
No,
said Sparrow.
They're just scared of her.
Maybe they should be, Kira muttered. Sparrow surprised her by laughing so loudly the sound echoed up and down the hall.
That's it. You show them.
Even Huachong looked amused. The hallway led them through all 5 floors of the shield ring, and then, as Kira knew it would, to a maglev car waiting at the end. The car's side door was already open, the seats inside empty. From the blackness on the other side of the car, she could hear the whisper of the rotating hab ring, turning, turning, constantly turning.
Please watch your hands and feet as you enter, said the drone, stopping next to the car.
Yeah, yeah,
Falcone muttered. Kira took a seat with the rest of them and strapped herself in. Then a musical tone sounded, and from hidden speakers a woman's voice said, "The car is about to leave. Please tighten your seatbelts and secure all loose items." The door slid shut with a squeal. "Next stop, Hab Section C." The car accelerated forward, smoothly and with hardly any noise. It passed through the pressure seal at the end of the terminal and entered the main transit tube that lay embedded between the docking ring and the Hab ring. As it did, Kira felt the cab rotate inward, felt herself rotate, and a sensation of weight began to press her down into the seat. Her arms and legs settled, and within seconds, she felt as if she'd regained her usual number of kilos. The rotation combined with the acceleration was a weird feeling. For a moment, it left her dizzy, and then her perspective shifted as she adjusted to her new down. Down was between her feet, where it ought to be. Down pointed outward, through the shield ring and away from the station's hub. The car slid to a stop, and the door opposite the one they'd entered through popped its seal and retracted.
"Oh, I feel as if I'd been twisted around a spindle," said Vishal.
"You and me both, Doc," said Falcone.
A chorus of clicks as they released their belts, and then they stumbled out into the terminal, still finding their balance on unsteady legs. Falcone stopped before he'd gone more than a step or two. Kira stopped next to him.
"Shibal."
Waiting for them was a phalanx of troopers in black power armor, all carrying weapons, all aimed at her and the crew. A pair of heavy assault units stood looming behind the others, like blocky giants, bug-faced and impersonal. At intervals between the troopers, turrets had been bolted to the floor, and filling the air with a hum like a million angry wasps was a swarm of battle drones. The door to the maglev snapped shut. A voice boomed.
"Hands on your heads! Drop to your knees! You will be shot if you fail to comply! Move!"